Okay, Boker Tov, good morning to everybody. I'd like to pick up in many ways from where we left off and get our teeth into some interesting minhagim. There are so many to choose from, and over the next few weeks we will have a lot of fun, I think, with these. The Jewish people loved its minhagim. And as we saw last week, in many ways that's what makes us different. It stops us from just being carbon copies of each other, individualizing Judaism to some degree. As Rav Hirsch said, we saw in last week's sheet, is desirable, and it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. One source I didn't make point out last week is that when Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of the 40 years in the desert, he writes a Sefer Torah. He wrote one standard Sefer Torah to use as an authorized copy that they kept with the Aron Kodesh. And then he wrote another 12 copies and gave one to each of the tribes to take away. I can't remember who says this, but one of the classic Meforshim says that's because he wants each tribe to develop their own individual style, their own flavor of Judaism, based on, obviously, on the text of the Torah, based on the Torah Shebaal Peh that he gave them. But there should be Reuven-type Torah and Levi-type Torah and Shimon-type Torah, etc. And that's always been the way it was meant to be. I remember once when I was walking back from the Kotel on a Friday night with a group of people. It was a post-birthright group of young men and women who were getting more involved in Jewish life, and they hadn't been to the Kotel before on Friday night. It's an amazing experience. So one of the chaps there was walking up with me on the way back to dinner Friday night and said, there must have been 1,000 people there, at least at the Kotel. But there were like 15, at least 25 different minyanim. Everyone was doing something different, you know, with each other. So he said, wouldn't it have been nicer if all 1,000 people could have all davened together at one minyan at the Kotel on Friday night? And I said, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it would have been nicer. Actually, I think it's much more the Jewish way that there are 15 different minyanim, and everybody makes room a little bit for everybody else, and every now and then dances with the other one. That's, I think, the Jewish way to do it, rather than just to crowd around in our thousands and say we are all individuals in unison. Anyone who gets the reference will get it. Yes?
Next time, in the future, we'll have the Beit HaMikdash, we'll all be one big
minion. When we had a Beit HaMikdash, we were one big happy family? We will be. I'm not so sure about that. But we don't have to be the same. We have to get on with each other. I once heard from Rav Zev Lef. So it says, when it says in Birkas HaKodesh, V'kabtzenu nidchenu mechol, V'kabetz nidchenu mechol, K'tzei HaAretz, God will bring us together from all parts of the world. That's very nice. But the next three words are, Chaverim Kol Yisrael. Meaning there's no point bringing us all together if everyone's going to fight with each other. So if you're going to bring the Jews together, they have to be chaverim. Chaverim doesn't mean they have to be the same, but they have to be tolerant of each other. So let's have a look at this particular minhag. A lot of people keep a different amount of time between meat and milk. And first of all, maybe I'll take some like a survey of what people do. So please raise your hand if you keep 6 hours between meat and milk. Okay, so we've got about 12 or 13 middle-aged takers there. I don't suppose, does anyone keep more than 6 hours? We'll see that there are minhagim of more than 6 hours. Okay, who keeps into the 6 hour? Like 5 and a bit, or 5 and a half? Is it 5 and a half? Or
5 and a bit.
5 and a bit. 5 and a bit. 5 and a bit. 5 and a bit. Fine. Who keeps 4 hours? One 4 hour taker. We'll see where that comes from soon. Who keeps 3 hours? The English crowd. The English crowd. Track, yeah. I'll raise my hand there as well. I'll raise my hand there as well. Okay, fine.
Afternoon tea.
Bill, I wouldn't want to take you from your afternoon tea. Who keeps 1 hour? Some old authentic Yekkers? Dutch? Does anyone keep anything between 1 and 3 hours, like 2 hours? I've never heard of 2 hours, but you never know with people. Fine. And nobody keeps less than 1 hour. Well, you don't have to tell me if you do. That's okay. That's not my business. So let's have a look now where all of this comes from. The psukim, and I wanted to start with this because it's in this week's parasha that we just read, The Pesukim talk about meat and milk in three different places. Let's just quickly look and review the three Pesukim that deal with it. Number one. Shalosh Bamim B'Shana Yirei calls the Churcha Es Pnei Ha'azon Hashem. Now you'll ask me, what's that got to do with meat and milk? So you'll see in the first two sources, the dinim of meat and milk seems to have something to do with the Chagim, and to do with Korbanot, not necessarily to do with Kashrut. So three times a year, we have to appear, every male has to appear before God on the Shalosh Regalim. Loisizbach al chametz dam zivchi. Do not have any chametz in the house when you sacrifice the Korban Pesach. We'll get to that when we get more the further towards Pesach. Velo yalin chaylev chagi ad boker. And do not leave the facts of my sacrifice over till the morning. That is referring again to the Korban Pesach, which has to be eaten by midnight, can't be left till the morning. Reishit bikurei ad moscha tavi beis Hashem Elokecha. Bring the first fruits of your land to the Beit HaMikdash. Lot of Ashel Gidi b'chaleivimo. And do not cook a kid in its mother's milk. So again, the context of that pasuk seems to be something to do with sacrificial rites or korbanos. Maybe there were certain pagan rites that people had on their festivals of meat and milk mixed together. The Rambam talks about it tomorrow in Nebuchim. We have to keep away from them, especially on the holidays, etc. But it says, Lot Tevashel Gidi B'chalevimo. More about that in a minute. The second pasuk is very similar. It comes just a few parshas later. Shalosh Parmim B'Shana Yireh Kol Zechurit B'nei Ha'adon Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Very similar to what we saw in number one. Ki Oirish Goy Mipanecha. When I open the land up and I chase away the inhabitants from in front of you, v'hirchavti et kvulecha, and I broaden your boundaries, lo yachmodish et atzacha ba'alotcha l'reitz p'nei Hashem l'kecha shalosh palim b'shana. Even though all the men are going on the aliyah l'regel and leaving the land apparently open to invasion, God forbid, by others, says God, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, I give you a special bracha, you can go in with peace of mind to the Chagim and not worry, people are going to take over the land. Lo tishchat al chametz dam zivchi, like we saw before, do not have chametz in your possession, or do not shecht my korban pesach when you have chametz. The lo yalin leboke zevach hakapasach, just like we saw before. Reish bikurei ad maschat tevei beis Hashem Elokecha, lo yitzavash el gidi b'chalei vimoy. The last pasuk is identical. So again we see a second reference to basar v'chalav in the context again of the Chagim. The third reference in Sefer Dvarim is in the context of Kashrus. V'chol sherit ha'oiv tamei hu lachem lo yachem. Any sherit ha'oiv is tamei for you, lo yachem. You're not allowed to eat creepy crawlies that fly around the air. V'chol oiv tahor, if it's a kosher bird, tochelu, then you can eat it. Now, we'll have a discussion on another occasion, Yitz Hashem, about how do we know what a kosher bird is. We talked a little bit around Thanksgiving about turkey. But there are more turkeys, there are more birds to talk about than turkey just on that issue. The Torah does not give specific simanim, indications as to how we know which are kosher birds and which are not. It just gives lists of trait birds. More about that another time. Loitachlu kol nevela. Don't eat any meat which is nevela. Nevela means meat which has not been shechted properly, which has just been killed in some other way. What should we do with that meat? Lagera shebesharecha tidnena. You can give it to your non-Jewish neighbors. You can even sell it to your non-Jewish neighbors. That's another discussion. Vachala, and they can eat it. Or machor l'nochri, you can sell it to the non-Jews. Ki am kodesh ata, el Hashem elokecha, because you are a holy people, you shouldn't be eating tray food. Lots of Hashem gidi b'chalei v'mo. Don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Now there already you see that the context is clearly to do with prohibited foods and permitted foods. It's nothing to do with the Chagim, and we'll work all of these together. So three references not to cook a kid in its mother's milk. Now there's a lot more to say about this on a pshat level, on a remez level, on a sod level. We're not getting into all of that now. There are all sorts of allusions and references going on with mixtures. Again, I'm not getting into that now. Maybe we'll have a conversation about that nearer towards Shavuot, because one of the things I want to talk about nearer to Shavuot is some of the milk minhagim to do with Shavuot. More about that soon. Suffice it to say for now that there is a machlokes within the classic moine ha-mitzvahs, those who count the mitzvahs, as to how many mitzvahs of the 613 we actually have here. The Tashbab says these are three different mitzvahs. If you don't eat meat and milk, you're keeping three different mitzvahs. The Rambam says it's two mitzvahs, and the Baha'i says it's all one mitzvah. But I'm not getting into why that is now. The interesting thing which kicks us off into our discussion is when Unclus translates these verses in the Torah, he translates all three similarly in the same way. Or you'll see the wording at the end of number four. For example, on the Pesukim in Shmos Kaf Gemel, he says, Reish Bikuri Acha, Teisi Leveis Mikdasha, La Shem Elokach. So you have to bring the Bikurim up until the Beit HaMikdash. Lo Tichlun Batar V'chalav. Lo Tichlun Batar V'chalav. Don't eat milk and meat. He doesn't even mention cooking. He doesn't even mention a gedi, a kid, or the mother. He just says, Lo Tichlun Basar B'chalav. That's what these psukim mean. Don't eat milk and meat together. And the question is, how do we get to this? I once went many years ago to visit the Shomronim in Lehagrizim. And we had a little trip there, and we were in Sukkah, actually. We went on Sukkot, and they had their Sukkah in the house, not outside the house. And we had an opportunity to ask all these questions to different people. And I asked the guy, I asked the fellow there, why do you have your sukkah inside the house? I was expecting some interesting insight into how well they read the sukkah this way as opposed to that way. And, you know, they said, look, we used to have our sukkahs outside the house, but the Arabs threw stones at us, so we started having them inside the house. So that was a bit of a disappointing beginning, where I was expecting some hermeneutic, dynamics there, and all it was actually that we were scared of the stones. Okay, I understand that. But then I asked him, do you have separate dishes for milk and meat? And he said, Pesach. So I said, Lama. Why? Why do you have different dishes for milk and meat? Where did it say anywhere in the verses you have to have separate meat dishes and milk dishes? So he looked at me and he said, that's a good question. I'll have to ask the Kohen Gadol, which is what I got an answer to quite a number of the questions. And I realized I should have really gone to see the Kohen Gadol. They have a Kohen Gadol. And he said he'd know the answer to that question, and that's on my list of things to do at some stage, to go back to the Shomronim this time to go and sit with the Kohen Gadol. But there is no reference in the Pesukim here to separate dishes. There is no reference to eating meat and milk together, except the connection with the kashrus laws in number three. But nevertheless, Onkelos understands as a matter of halacha, it's don't eat milk and meat. How does he know that? So two important Gemaras now. Let's get into Chazal, into the Drash, and then we'll get into the Minhag from that. Look at number five. Chazal say in Chulin, lots of Hashem. Tanu debei Rabbi Yishmael. Ksiv lots of Hashem, gedi b'chalev imo, shalosh pa'amim. Three times it says this. Very famous now. Echad li'isur achila. One is to prohibit eating the food together. Echad li'isur hana'a. One is to prohibit any benefit from the food together. Ve'echad li'isur bishul. And one is to prohibit cooking. Three different prohibitions, Min HaTorah. One is cooking, one is eating, and one is getting any benefit from the mixture when it's cooked together. More details in that in a minute. Similarly, the three repetitions are brought down as a reference to other things as well. Number six, Gedi. Why does it say Gedi? A kid of a mammal. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Nem Alois V'Shel Gedi V'Chalev Emo Shalosh Pa'amim. Similarly, he says three mentions. Pret, they come to exclude a Chaya, says Rabbi Akiva. This is debated in Halacha. But according to Rabbi Akiva, if you eat venison or wild bison, it's paraf, not fleshik, because it's a chaya, not a behema, and a gedi is a behema. Okay, again, Halacha lemaisa, I'm not paskening halachas if you're excited to have a bison dinner or a venison dinner. They have these dinners. Rabbi Slifkin ran one of these dinners around Yom Kippur time, where everybody sat down and ate these wild and wonderful creatures, and he can no doubt give you a shir about all of that. But according to Rabbi Kiva, venison is parva, okay? La'of, birds, are parva, according to the Torah, because obviously a gedi is a mammal which sucks on its mother's milk, and birds don't give milk. Ula behema tameya, and also a treif animal, which is interesting. If you were to eat pig together with milk, so says Rabbi Akiva, you'd be doing the aveira of eating the pork or the pig, but you wouldn't be doing the aveira of eating meat and milk. And there's a discussion as to whether, even if you eat beef and milk, but the beef is treif beef, is that still a prohibition of meat and milk? Maybe that's just a prohibition of eating treif, but it's not meat and milk. Maybe if you need meat and milk, you have to have kosher meat with kosher milk, and it might well be that the only McDonald's that you can really do the aveira l'mahadrin min a'mahadrin of eating basa v'chalav is here in Arteinu HaKodesh, where we have kosher meat and kosher milk mixed together. Whereas if you eat in New York, then for sure you're eating treif, but it may not be basar v'chalav if you have a cheeseburger there. Anyway, three different mentions for three different purposes. And when the Shulchan Aruch rules this, he rules this in exactly that way. Let's get into more into the halacha lamaisa. Look in number 7. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Katuv b'Torah, Asav Hashel Gidi b'Chalevimo. Gimel Pamin, he makes the point of saying three mentions. Echad le'isa bishul, one is to prohibit cooking them together, even if you're not going to eat them. Meaning if you're going to be a kosher chef, and you want, I've had this question asked to me and I've consulted people about it, people who want to be a chef in a non-kosher establishment, is there any problem with them cooking up pork, chops and trace food? And the answer is, no, there's no problem with them cooking up trace food, they just can't eat it and they can't serve it to Jewish people. But there is a problem with them cooking meat and milk. If indeed it is really basar v'chalav, which is where we come into there doesn't need to be kosher meat and kosher milk discussion, but yes, just cooking them together is part of the prohibition. Echad le'isra achila, one is the prohibition of eating them. Ve'echad le'isra hana, and one is to get any benefit. There is no general prohibition on getting benefit from trade food. If somebody gives you a pork chop for a present at work or whatever, you can give it to a non-Jewish colleague quite happily. There may be problems dealing in and running a business in trade food, but just getting benefit from a specific piece of trade food, I think I mentioned a few shirim ago that I was once given a crate of extremely expensive trade champagne by a client who was very grateful that I picked up a loophole. I was quite junior at the time. I was quite surprised that I noticed it, but I picked something up in one of his contracts, and he ended up with almost $1 million more than he thought he was going to get. And none of us could quite believe that I actually, you know, this was real, but it was real. And he was obviously over the moon, and he bought me a crate of very, very expensive champagne, which I couldn't drink a drop. So I went to one of the Dionym actually in London, and I said, what shall I do with this? Do I need to pour it all down the sink? And he said, no, you don't have to pour it down the sink, you can sell it. So I sold it to my colleagues, and I bought with it something much more appropriate, which I think was some very expensive Scotch whiskey. A mezuzah! Oh, you obviously think very highly of me. In fact, it was some very expensive Scotch whiskey. But, okay, fine. So you can get benefit from trade food, but not from meat and milk. Had my colleague bought me a beautiful meat and milk mixture, that would have been a problem. As indeed is chametz on Pesach. My father-in-law was once given on Seder night a bottle of whiskey by someone who came for Seder night who were clueless that whiskey was even chametz. And it was, thank you very much, straight down the sink. Obviously not in front of the person who gave it to them, but run upstairs, straight down the sink. There's nothing you can do with that other than that. Loima, and this tells us, says the Shulchan Aruch, She'eina osa min ha-Torah ele derech bishul. Oh, this is already new. The prohibition according to the Torah is only if it's cooked together, meaning a cooked mixture, or eating a cooked combination, or cooking them together. Aval midrabanan, but on a rabbinic level, asur b'chol inyan, all other extensions are also prohibited. We'll get to what they are in a minute. And the Ramah just adds, v'chol basa b'chalav she'ein osa min ha-Torah. Why do I need to know if it's prohibited min ha-Torah or prohibited on a rabbinic level? Because if it's not prohibited min ha-Torah, says the Ramah, mutar b'hana'ah, I am allowed to get benefit from it, which has nafka minas, has implications. If someone were to mix chicken and milk, they can benefit from it. However, the Shulchan Aruch told us there that there are many rabbinic extensions to this. So, for example, let me list a few. If you eat cold meat and cold milk together, or cold cheese together, let's say you have a salami and cheese sandwich, says the Shulchan Aruch, that is a prohibition on a rabbinic level, not on a Torah level, because they're not cooked together. If you eat chicken, which we saw, min ha-Torah is parah, and milk, even cooked together, that is a rabbinic prohibition, because on a Torah level, only beef, or lamb, etc., is fleshic. If you have meat and cheese at the same table, there are rabbinic prohibitions on having meat and cheese at the same table, or meat and milk at the same table. I'm sure people are aware of this. You have to have them on different cloths or different mats or something like that to make some kind of a heker, to make some kind of a distinction, so you can see people are not going to nibble from anybody else's food. Similarly, we have, and this is where we're getting to today, Chazal introduced another rabbinic prohibition that if you ate meat, you're not even allowed to eat milk until you wait. And the question is, how long do you have to wait? And we'll see this. Yes?
Is salami and pastrami considered cooked meat?
No, it doesn't matter if the meat's cooked. It has to be cooked together with the milk, together with the cheese. Salami for sure is cooked, but it's irrelevant. It's only if you cook it together with the cheese that it's a Torah prohibition. If you put cheese and salami and stick it in the oven and you make a pepperoni pizza or whatever it is, so that will be basar v'chalav. Yes, on a Torah level. Obviously, to eat them cold is prohibited, for it's prohibited rabbinically. Yes? dog food. Correct, and therefore one has to get into a conversation there about whether it's really basar v'chalav. For example, that's where you get into a conversation about, is it really basar v'chalav if the food, if the meat is treif? Meaning, if the meat is from a mamash treif source like a rabbit, then you certainly don't have a problem, because that's for sure only rabbinic prohibition, therefore to get benefit from the dog, to giving to the dog, is fine. If it's beef and milk, then you have to have a conversation about, what is treif beef, is that still a problem? And people have these shilas when it comes to dog food. Of course you can buy dog food with a heksha in this country. You can buy aluminum foil with a heksha. So that's also good. Truth is, aluminum foil may need a heksha depending if they grease it. That's another discussion. What you may have picked up on is that we seem to have increasing number of fences on fences on fences on fences, which is unusual. Because one of the principles of rabbinic laws is they're not allowed to make a gezeira on a gezeira. Meaning where the Torah says, "Shmartem et mishmarti," you must guard my law, says God. You must guard my law, not your law. Therefore you, the rabbis, the Sanhedrin, had a mandate to create fences to guard the Torah law. But if they create a fence, they can't create another fence and another fence and another fence. And yet here, that seems to be the case. For example, are you allowed to eat cold chicken and cheese together? No, obviously not. But why? In case you eat hot chicken and cheese together, but that itself is a rabbinic prohibition. So maybe you can't have cold chicken and cheese in case you have hot chicken and cheese, in case you have hot beef and cheese. You seem to have a number of gezeiras. And the Taz comes around and says, yes, actually, in this particular area, this is an exception. Look at number 8. The AFLP, even though he's talking about having things on the same table, AFLP kashir ochlam yachad, if you were to eat cold meat and cold cheese, nibble from the same table, nami leka issa doraisa. That's also not an issa doraisa, because if you were to nibble cold cheese and cold meat together, that's the rabbanon. She'ein issa ela daska derech bishul. The only prohibition is if you mamash, if you cook it or eat a cooked combination, yachad. When him says, I have a gezeira l'gezeira, and it would turn out that this will be a fence on a fence, says the Tazi Nachinami, the Gemara Amrina, the Bechiai Gavna, Gazrini Gezeira Gezeira. We are sufficiently concerned, and we'll see this is maybe one of the reasons why we have extra minhagim and chumras coming on this with milk and meat. It's mentioned 3 times, we take it very seriously, that we do indeed see that Chazal made gezeiras on gezeiras to make certain fences on fences in order to keep us well away from anything which is even remotely close to basar v'chalav. And one of those things, as we saw, was waiting between meat and milk. So let's have a look at that specific issue. Look at number 9. Amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda comes along the Gemara and says, Achal basar, if you ate meat, asur le'echal gvina, you are then not subsequently allowed to eat cheese. Now we need to think a little bit about why he says cheese and not milk. What's with cheese, etc. That's not necessarily for now, but we'll come to that. Gvina, but if you ate cheese, mutar le'echal basar, we have no problem with you after eating cheese, straight away eating meat. Now, I already see some confused looks and saying, that's not right, because we do not eat meat after cheese. Maybe certain kinds of cheese, hard cheese, etc. And that is the subject, Bezrat Hashem, of another shir on Minhagim, which I want to give a little bit closer to Shavuos. Because there is an entire discussion as to what do you do after you eat cheese and then want to eat meat. According to this Gemara, Rav Chisda said, we're not bothered by that. That doesn't bother us at all. We're only bothered about milk after meat, not meat after milk. However, that is not the case, and various minhagim have grown up. There's a very famous Maharam of Rottenberg who said, we'll learn the tshuva when we get there, I'm already planning that out. He says he used to laugh at people who waited after cheese before they eat meat. He used to say it was heresy, because it's against the Gemara. The Gemara says you don't have to wait. And then one day, he said, I had a very bad experience. I ate some lovely cheese, and then later on I had some meat pretty soon after and found cheese between my teeth, and then I got all upset and realized actually maybe there is something to be said for waiting between cheese and meat. We'll have a discussion about that when we get there. But for now, let's take it as there's only a problem between meat and milk, or meat and cheese. Amalei Rav Acha bar Yosef l'Rav Chisda. So Rav Acha bar Yosef says to Rav Chisda, why? What's the problem? Why do you have to wait if you have meat and then you want to eat cheese? So basa shibena shinaim mahu. What is the story of the meat that's left between your teeth? Where the meat that's left between your teeth, if you eat meat, is that still meat? And for how long is that still meat? meaning, obviously when you eat meat, you get stuff stuck between your teeth. That's why people floss and have toothpicks and all that stuff. So he says, what's the state of this meat? So he answers him, Kari Ale, he brings the pasuk. The habasar odena ben shinehem. What is that talking about? That's the slav. When in Kibrot Hava, when the people were collecting the slav to eat and they were gorging themselves on slav, it says there in the verse that the meat was still between their teeth when they died. So you see that what's between your teeth is still meat. So he says, you see from here that stuff between your teeth is still called meat. How long? An hour? 5 hours? 3 days later? Surely there must come a point at which what's left between your teeth is no longer anything remotely similar to basar. So we need to work out how that works in practice and what do we do about this issue of waiting. So what are the reasons why we wait between meat and milk? So one of them we've already seen, maybe just look at number 11 for a second, we'll go back to number 10. The Rambam writes, when he's talking about waiting between meat and milk, Misha achal basar, bitchila, someone who ate meat first, bein basar behema, whether it's meat of a behema, like a cow or a lamb, bein basar oif, it doesn't matter whether it's meat of a bird, a chicken, whatever, a turkey, lo yochal achrav chala, you are not allowed to have milk after you've eaten meat. I've missed out how long he says to wait. We'll get that soon. Why? He gives a reason. Mitnei habasar shel bein shinayim she'enu sar bikinuach. Meat which is left between your teeth, even if you were to clean your teeth, the meat doesn't come out. I don't know how often people clean their teeth in those days. Probably not as often as they should have done. But the Rambam was quite keen on personal hygiene and health. And certainly has a lot to say about different aspects of health. And therefore he says, even if you clean your teeth, it doesn't get rid of the meat. And therefore you have to wait between eating meat and eating milk. That's the reason of the Rambam. Rashi has a different reason. We'll see that there are practical differences between them. Look at number 10 for a second. Don't go over yet. Just go to number 10. Asal echol gvina, says Rashi. Why? He doesn't mention the meat between your teeth. Says Rashi, mishum de basar moitzi shumam. Because when you eat meat, it leaves a greasy taste in your mouth, for who nidbak bapeh, you can't get this out of your mouth so easily. Anyone who remembers, a good meal at Bloom's or wherever it is, will know that the experience stays with you for some time afterwards. Okay, umarich batamo, it stays with you. The taste, you just can't get rid of the taste, says Rashi, and therefore it's nothing to do with the meat being between your teeth. It's just the mouth having this kind of meat coating on it. There are a number of practical implications to that. For example, what if you chew meat and spit it out? You don't swallow it. It doesn't really go into your mouth. For example, if you're chewing meat, sometimes you chew meat for a small child. People probably don't do that anymore because everyone's a germ freak, whatever. But people used to certainly chew up meat a little bit, then give it to their kids. Does that make them fleshic? Meaning, if it's about meat being between your teeth, then yeah, it's between your teeth. But if it's about the mouth having a meaty taste, well, it doesn't have a meaty taste because you didn't really swallow anything. What happens if you just taste a little bit of chicken soup and spit it out? On Friday afternoon, does that make you fleshic? Well, there's nothing between your teeth at all. And also, it probably doesn't leave a taste in your mouth. Well, that's also an implication. What if you floss your teeth immediately after having a meat meal and you get rid of all of the meat between your teeth, but you still have that coating? I mean, it will depend on the reason that you give as to whether you're still fleshic or not fleshic, maybe. The answer is, actually, it doesn't make any difference, because we are machmeh for both of those reasons. Have a look, please, on the top of page number 3. The Taz, in number 12, says, Yesh v'zeh bet tamin. There are two reasons why we wait between meat and milk. Ha'echad, number 1, shehabasa moti shuman, he quotes Rashi, that the meat gives off fatty residue. U'moshech tam adzman aroch. And it stays in your mouth for a good long time. We'll see how long is long. Well, if he's there, according to this reason, he says, Mishalo achal ela loes, if you didn't eat the meat, you just chewed it for the baby, eino tzarech lahamtin, according to that reason of Rashi, you would not be fleshik, because there's no meat coating around your, mouth, you just chewed it for the child. The tam bet, the second reason, which is the Rambam's reason, hutama Rambam, mishum basa shebein hashinayim, demikre basa ad sheish shaos, 6 hours, and we'll see where he gets that from, the Rambam. After 6 hours, he says, even the stuff between your teeth is just digested, it's kind of disintegrated. Well, afize gam haloet kayv lahamtin. According to that reason, if you chew the meat for your child, you would still have to wait. Rak yesh kula babasa shebena shinaim she'achav avshals. But if the meat's there after 6 hours in your teeth, that will be fine. So what do we rule? He says, v'kaimalan, we paskan, we rule in practice, lahachmir kashnei hata'amin. We are machmir for both reasons. Therefore, there are lots of opportunities to make yourself fleishik. You know, they say that yeshiva bochrim are only scared of two things, having to bench and being fleishik. And you, when you meet them, it really seems to be the case. It's something of an anxiety so you will become fleishik quite easily, says the Taz, because we're machmir for both reasons. So if you chew, you're fleishik. If you don't chew, you just swallow, you're fleishik. If you just taste the meat and then taste the food and it's not got meat in it to chew and you spit it straight out, then maybe you won't be fleishik if you spit it straight out. Again, I'm not a poysik, I'm not coming here to pass on halachas. And certainly if you eat meat, if you eat para food rather, which was cooked in a meaty pot, let's say you have rice or potatoes, which was cooked in a meat pot, that for sure will not make you fleishik. Because even if the pot was used shortly before for meat, if there's no actual meat in it, then you cannot become fleishik just because the food was cooked in a meaty pot. It may well be that you can't eat that food with milk together, but the meat with the food will not make you fleishik. That's agreed on by everybody, and you could eat milk immediately thereafter. Whether, by the way, if you are fleishik, you can then eat food which was cooked in a milky pot, that's a different shaila, and I'm not getting into all of that now. It may depend if it's harif or not harif, but I'm not getting into that now. Fine, so you have to wait. How long do you have to wait? And this is what we're really getting to, and this is where we'll see the references to the minhagim coming flowing in. Number 13. Amar Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva says in the Gemara, we saw this at the end of last time. Laha milt ana, he says, laha milta, for this issue of waiting between meat and milk, I am chala bar chamra. I am vinegar, the son of wine. Lagabi Abba, compared to my dad. Why? The ilu Abba, because the father of Mar Ukva, he says, ki have achel bisra ha'itna. If he ate meat today at 10 to 11 on Wednesday, he says loy have achel gvina. He wouldn't eat cheese ad lemachar until tomorrow ad shach at this time. He would wait till 10 to 11 on Thursday, and he would wait 24 hours between milk and meat. The ilu Ana, but as far as I'm concerned, he says, I don't do that. The hasudasa hudalachlna, I don't eat it in the same meal. I wouldn't eat meat and then milk in the same meal. But the sudasa acharita achlina, but I do eat it at the next meal. I don't wait 24 hours. I eat milk at the next meal after I've eaten meat. And he leaves it at that. That's all the Gemara says. The Gemara could easily agree. What's that? Good. So the Gemara doesn't tell us. Meaning the Gemara knows how to talk about hours. In the Gemara in Brachas, when it talks about davening, and when it talks about Kriya Shema, we have very complex calculations of hours, the third hour and the fourth hour, and Erev Pesach, and everything. If the Gemara wanted to give us hours, it would give us hours. But the Gemara says no. Meal to meal. And you can work out from that what your minhag is going to be as to how you understand that, and we'll talk about that immediately. Have a look now in the Rambam. The Rambam picks up on this and says as follows. What is meal to meal? 14. Mi sha'achal basar betchilat bein basar behema bein basar. If you eat meat initially, whether it's meat from an animal or meat from a bird, etc. Lo yachal achrav chalav ad shiye beinehem kedei shir suda acheret. Says the Rambam, when he says from one meal to the next, he is giving us a time period. How long is it from one meal to the next meal? Again, I'll read you the words in the Rambam. Kedei shir suda acheret. The time period from one meal to the next. What is that? Vahu, and that is kamo sheish shaos. Around 6 hours. Now the Rambam puts in that word kamo. He could have said sheish shaos. He says, it's not an exact science. It's kamo sheish shaos. It's around 6 hours. Mitnei abasa shebena shinayim she'enum sar bikinuach. Because the meat, as we said, sticks in your teeth. Yes. Good, we'll get to that. Let's assume for now he's talking standardized 60-minute hours, but we'll see that the prima donna says he's probably talking halakhic hours, therefore that will depend. Now, halakhic hours is all very well in the winter when you're going to bring the 6 down to 4 or something like that, but of course in the summer you're going to expand it out to 8, and therefore, you know, halakhic hours come in both directions. But we'll deal with halakhic hours when we get there. So the Rambam says around 6 hours. And this is basically where the minhag of into the 6 hour comes from. A number of people pick up on this approximated time. It's not just the Rambam. It's also, I brought you in the article below, I brought you a reference, by the way, to a very nice article that you can get off the web by Rabbi Yehuda Schwitz, which talks about a lot of these shittas with a lot of footnotes. But this shitta of the Rambam is brought also in the Meiri, in the Kolbo, in the Orchos Chaim, and in other places too. This is the origin, as I said, of into the 6 hour. This is why those of you who write five, wait five and a bit, some people wait just over 5 and a half, because they're saying, look, the Rambam said the approximation. Why? Because there isn't an exact science to how long people wait from one meal to the next. It's around 6 hours. And of course, in the Gemara, we see it's around 6 hours. People had an early morning, whatever. They didn't really have breakfast in those days, but they had a lunch meal and they had a dinner meal. They were out working in the field. You have lunch, you have dinner, there's around 6 hours, and that's still the case today in the Mediterranean, warm climates. You get up early on in the morning, when it's still cool, you have a bit something to eat at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, you have something at 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you have something at 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. 6 hours is a sensible amount of time between Suda, Le Suda. By the way, this approximation of Kamoshe Shas also finds its way into the Halacha. One of my Rosh Yeshiva told me that sometimes in the yeshivas, when they eat fleishiks for lunch, that seems to be a daraisa, that yeshivas have to have fleishiks for lunch. I've never yet been in a yeshiva where they didn't have fleishiks for lunch or visited. So they have fleishiks for lunch and then they usually have milchiks for dinner. And in the winter time, when the sedarim are a little bit different, it's not always exactly 6 hours. And people don't always remember when they finished eating meat and etc., etc. So a number of the poskim say, you know something? It doesn't have to be an exact second-by-second analysis. You don't have to watch the clock to count the 6 hours. You should know it's 6 hours. But if you think it's 6 hours and it's around, maybe that's good enough. Meaning, this is what's coming out of Kamo Sheshas. So that is the Rambam's view of around 6 hours. The Rosh, who is Ashkenazi, picks this up in number 15 and says something very interesting. The High Sudas Aloy Achil, the Basudas Achrin Achil. He quotes Mar Okva. Not in the same meal. Perish. What does this mean? Bizmana shiragil adam lis'od. It's again, like the Rambam, it's zmanim. The time that it takes to wait from one to the next. Hainu, mizman sudat haboker, ad zman sudat ha'erev. From your morning meal to your evening meal. Sudat haboker, I don't think he means breakfast. Because I don't think people... He means the late morning meal to the early evening meal. Because brunch is a modern invention. Only Western European people know from brunch, I think. But they used to basically have a morning meal and an evening meal. Upachot mishil zeh ein lechol gvina achabasa. You can't eat cheese after meat in less than that time. So lo ashkechan, and look what he says now. Because lo ashkechan mandashari af behind shira. Even this shear of meal to meal, the only person that we find that was prepared to be lenient like that is Elamar Ukva, is Mar Ukva. And look at what he calls himself. He calls himself Vinegar, the son of wine. Says the Rosh, the Gemara is telling you that this is the bare minimum. The bare minimum. Don't you dare be any more lenient than 6 hours between a lunch and a dinner meal, because even Mar Ukva, who allowed himself that leniency, he wasn't proud of himself. He says he's Vinegar, the son of wine. And by the way, there are a number of poskim over the centuries who brought down that it is recommended, or at least for people who want to do this, to taka keep 24 hours. The Arizal recommends that people keep 24 hours, or certain people keep 24 hours, and certain Sephardi poskim bring down 24 hours. Therefore, I've never seen anyone in practice that waits 24 hours, but it's not completely out of the question. The Rosh seems to be indicating that even 6 hours is something of a lenient opinion. However, let's go from one extreme to the next. The Rosh was the student of the last of the Balei HaTosfos. The Rosh's teacher was the Maharam of Rottenburg. And the Maharam of Rottenburg came from a tradition of Tosfot in Northern Europe. Tosfot have a completely different understanding of this entire discussion, which makes the Rosh even more surprising. Look in Tosfot, in number 16. Tosfot here says the following. The Sudasa Achrina Achim. He quotes again this Gemara and says he doesn't eat the same meal, but the next meal he'll eat. He says, Love the Sudasa Sheregidim La'asod Achashachas Fa'achasar. It's Daka not what the Rambam says it is and what the Rosh says it is. It's not the morning meal to the evening meal. It's not a shear of time. Ela afilu la'alta. What does la'alta mean? Immediately. Im siluk ha'shulchan, if you clear the table, ubirich, and you make a brocha achroni, you bench or whatever it is, mutter, you can eat cheese immediately. Deloi plug rabona, because all they said is one meal to the next, they didn't make distinctions. Some people have a long time between the meals, some people have a short time between the meals. According to this opinion of the Balei Tosfos, if you were in Balei, in their house, and you have a big meat dinner, you'll bench, you'll maybe wash your hands, you'll maybe clean out your mouth or other issues as well, and then you'll bring out the cheesecake 10 minutes later. Because he says that's the point, from one meal to the next meal. Who are you to say that the next meal is 6 hours away? Maybe the next meal is 5 minutes away. And therefore, it seems that they're recording a very, very different minhag. Yes? Right. Right. I didn't have this problem recently because they just cancelled my flight straight and I didn't even get on the plane. So I had no, maybe that's to help me avoid basa v'chalav issues. Or maybe just the pilots went on strike. But you're right. El Al are not there to help you to be, you know, but you have to watch your own clock. In my experience in El Al, normally speaking, it's 6 hours, depending on where you're flying. But it depends on where you are. You know, if you fly a transatlantic flight, they'll give you a meat meal and then a milk meal in the morning. Whatever, you just have to keep an eye on the clock. Yes?
You mentioned about finishing the meal, benching.
Yes.
But on Sabbath lunch, you can finish your meat at 2 o'clock and you might not bench until 3:30.
Good. We'll see whether that's relevant. Do you count from 2 or do you count from 3:30? We'll get there in a few minutes. We'll deal with that question. So Tosfos has the view, it's mamish the next meal. This is not a Das Yachid, this is not a soul view. Look at number 17. Rabbeinu Tam also says this. Who of course one of the Balei Tosfos. It's number 17. Rabbeinu Tam, Mefarish, he explains the following. V'chein halachas gedolis, and he quotes the Bahag as well. Da'achal basa osa la'echol gvina. Of course, if you eat meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese straight after. V'hainu, but that's only b'loina til ha'shadayim, if you choose not to wash your hand. V'kinuach, and wash your mouth. Aval b'netila, but if you choose to wash your hands, v'kinuach, and you choose to wash your mouth, shari, you can do what you like. You can eat your cheesecake 5 minutes after you finish your meat meal. So he hands in there, of course you have to bench, but you have to just wash your hands, wash your mouth, milk straight away. Ah, what's with Mar Ukva? Mar Ukva waiting time. Mar Ukva, he says, the loy achar ad sudata achrita, when Mar Ukva says he's going to wait this extra time, hainu b'loy netila b'kinuach, that's if he chose not to wash his hands, or not to clean his mouth. Inami, alternatively, machmir al-atmoy haya. He was ultra machmir. He didn't need to really wait that long. He could have just washed his hands and then had a cheesecake straight away. See how interesting this is? The Reinu Tam understands Mar Ukva as a big machmir. He took a wait. He didn't have to wait. The Rosh understood Mar Ukva as a big makel. Really, he should be waiting 24 hours, but what can you do? He can't be like his dad. Amazing how they saw this in a radically different way. So we see here two basic minhagim. It's either a time period, and that time period is from morning to evening meal, 6 hours or around 6 hours, or it's just technically in the meal or not in the meal. Once you bench, clean your hands, clean your mouth, if you're not in the meal, you can have your cheesecake and be happy. So far, nobody's mentioned 3 hours. Everybody likes to come down hard on the 3 hour minhag, okay? And we'll talk more about that soon. The one possible source that you can bring in the Rishonim is number 18. Look at the Rabbeinu Yerucham. Rabbeinu Yerucham, who was one of the Balei Tosfos as well, he says the following. Number 18. Achal basa, osel echol gvina, hasuda achut. Fine. Kareb chizda. V'chein nag mar ukva, that was mar ukva's minag, mipnei shahabasa, v'shumen nidbak bepeh, he brings Rashi's reason, bizman arokh, that the taste in your mouth, the fatty taste. Because of the Rambam as well, mipnei shabasa shebein hashinayim, krui basa shenemava, basa odena ben hashinayim. He brings both reasons. And then he says the magic words, vahu gimel shas. This is 3 hours, karashi, like Rashi. It seems, according to the Rabbeinu Yerucham, Rashi waited 3 hours. If he thinks it's a good idea to floss your teeth before you get to the next meal, if you're proposing to eat cheese. But if you didn't actually have any real meat, just something fried in meaty schmaltz or something like that, then he's makel like the other Balei HaTosfos. You're allowed to eat cheese straight away, as long as you wash your mouth and you wash your hands, because it doesn't stick the same way. Now, 3 hours. Oh, beautiful. So all the Anglos who wait 3 hours have Ribbein Yeruchim to connect with. The problem is, it's not so simple. Number one, in the longer version of this same Sefer by Ribbein Yeruchim, he doesn't say 3 hours. He says 6 hours. According to many people, 3 hours is actually a misprint in Ribbein Yeruchim. Also, he's quoting another opinion here, and when you check that other opinion, that says 6 hours. And also, it's not clear that Ribbein Yeruchim even wrote this book in the first place. Therefore, I'm afraid to tell you that even though I am one of the three-hour people, Ribbein Yeruchim is not such an easy thing to connect with, and there have to be other reasons for the minhag. Now, let's move forward in time. So where are we holding? In the Middle Ages, two minhagim, either a six or round six minhag, or a just bench, wash your hands, and have your cheesecake and be happy. Along comes something that changed everybody's opinion, which was the Zohar. The Zohar, and I'm not getting into a long discussion about where was the Zohar between Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and when it appeared on the public scene in the 13th, 14th century. I'm not getting into a whole discussion about that. But it didn't appear on the public in the public arena till around the 13th, 14th century. So all of the sources that we've seen up until now, the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam, they never saw the Zohar. The Zohar, however, says some very, very scary things in last week's parsha about people who eat meat and milk. Look at, I'm just reading in English here in source number 19. He says on the top of page 4, the Zohar says, whoever eats a mixture of meat and milk together, or in the same hour, or in the same meal, for 40 days, he says, he will see visions of accusing angels as a slaughtered goat. Now, I don't know what this means. I'm not a Kabbalist, but it doesn't sound good. With myriads of impure powers surrounding him, causing unholy judgments to be awakened in the world. And should he conceive a son during those 40 days, they will place in him a soul from the other side. Now, again, you can go and ask your local Orthodox Kabbalist what this means, and I'm sure there are many deep answers that I'm not able to give you. But one thing is for sure, it scared the living daylights out of everybody in the Middle Ages. And therefore, everybody basically said, you know something, the Rambam and his followers said, well, this doesn't bother us because anyway we wait 6 hours. Although, it must be said, the Zohar didn't just say meat then milk. It would include milk then meat, which we'll get to when we talk about that way round. But the Rambam people, as far as milk and meat are concerned, don't have a problem. But Rabbeinu Tam and his followers do have a problem. Because there's no more cheesecake 5 minutes after benching anymore. You have to wait an hour. And that is indeed what happened. If you look at how the halacha was formulated in the Shulchan Aruch, if you take a snapshot in the 15th century, 16th century, look in number 20. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Achal basar. If somebody ate meat, even if it's meat of venison or meat of a bird, which may only be meaty on a rabbinic level, lo yochal gvina acharav ad sheyisheh shesh sha'ot. You have to wait 6 hours between meat and milk. Now, there's no more kamo shesh sha'ot into the six. It's six. No, shesh sha'ot. Finished. Therefore, the Sfaradim, almost all of the Sfaradim, wait 6 hours. There are the Sfaradim in Hagim which wait less than 6 hours. The Sfaradim in Greece and some of the Sfaradim in Europe, in Amsterdam, picked up less than 6 hours. But that may be because of the Ashkenazi influences. If anyone has more knowledge of that or background in that, I'd be happy to hear. But most Sfaradim who you speak to will wait 6 hours because that's what the Beit Yosef says you have to do. Comes along the Ramah. What are the Ashkenazim going to do? Says the Ramah three different things. The Yesh Omrim, there is of course an opinion. The Ein Tzrichin Lahamtin Sheishas. You don't need to wait 6 hours, he says. Rak Miyad, immediately. Im Salak, if you clear away Ubirech and you make a Brocha Achrona, Birkat Amazon, Mutta Al Yidei Kinuach V'Hadacha. You're allowed to eat cheesecake, cheese, milk straight away, as long as you wash your hands and mouth. That, of course, is the minhag of Tosfos we saw before. That he brings first. The haminhag hapashut, but the widespread minhag today, he says, the Birag Ros says, based on the Zohar, is the Medinas Elu, in Ashkenazi lands, what does everybody do? The Hamtin Achar Achilas Abasa Sha'ah Achat. 1 hour. And therefore, it's clear the Ramah is saying that the normative halacha for Ashkenazim is 1 hour. 1 hour because basically, in principle, the Ashkenazim can eat straight away. But nobody wants to mess with the Zohar, and therefore they'll wait 1 hour. V'oichlim achar kachvina, then you can eat your cheese. You must make a bracha achrona, gam kein brikas amazon, meaning you can't just wait an hour in the same meal. You can't have meat at 2 o'clock and then have a long meal and meat at 4 o'clock. You can't do that. You have to bench. Only then it's a separate meal. Then you're allowed to eat. But there are those, says the Ramah, who are particular, to wait actually 6 hours. Says the Ramah for Ashkenazim, this is a minhag which is a minhag nachon. Now, what does nachon mean? Right, does it mean you have to do it? You see, nachon in halacha doesn't mean you have to. It doesn't necessarily mean you should. It means it's recommended. It's a good thing to do. But it's not wrong if you don't. It's not like einu nachon. It's not the opposite of nachon, if you like. Nachon means it's appropriate to do. And you shouldn't be worried about breaking with your 1 hour minhag if you want to keep 6. He recommends that Ashkenazim should keep 6. Now, within a very short time after the Shulchan Aruch was written, this nachon turned a bit stronger. Look at number 21. This is what all the 6 hour people will throw at you if you ask them. The Shach, only 100 years after the Shulchan Aruch, says, the Kenkos of a Marashal, he quotes the Marashal, which was almost a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, who says, or Shlomo Luria, the Chen Rayla Asot, it is, now it's gone from Nachon to Ra'ui, it's really appropriate to keep 6. L'chol mi sheyesh bo reyach Torah. Anyone who has a shmek of Torah in them should not be keeping less than 6 hours. So that's already a little bit of emotional blackmail on that sense. You know. Okay, now 6 hours has turned into not just Nachon, but like, you're not really from if you don't keep 6 hours. And that should be for Ashkenazim as well. And in fairness, that became a widespread minhag of Ashkenazim. Just look at these sources here in 22. 22 is the Chochmas Adam. The Chochmas Adam is Rav Avram Danziger, who was living, he wrote the Chai Adam, the Chochmas Adam, he was living in Germany, in Danzig, in the 1700s. Look at what he says. Yesh Oimrim. Demasha Amrim Gemara Besuda Acherit Muta Ein Roit Seloimaz Mansuda Elasagi Behamtan Shachas. There is a view that you can wait 1 hour between milk and meat. The Zehu's man hat chalat ikl. And he quotes something we haven't seen before today, but many people say, is it to do with your digestion? Yeah. No one's mentioned digestion yet. They talked about grease in your mouth, meat in your teeth. He brings the cratial plasty, which is Rav Riodis and Ibershitz, who says it's all about digestion. And after 1 hour, you're beginning to digest the meat. Maybe 6 hours is the end of the digestion process. Maybe something to do with digestion. Once you bring in digestion, you open up a whole different set of discussions. By the way, almost nobody else mentions digestion. The Chasam Sofer picked up on this and suggested an interesting leniency. He said that maybe since when you're asleep, your digestive systems work much faster. If you had meat shortly before you went to bed, and then you slept a proper night's sleep, and you woke up less than 6 hours later, maybe you can eat milk for breakfast, even though it's less than 6 hours, if it's based on digestion. I don't know if you've heard this from other people. The Chasam Sofer, it's written about him that he tried a few times to do this, and I don't suspect that he slept very much at night, and he ate meat just before he went to bed, and he slept, and then in the morning he wanted to have his cup of tea with milk, and he said the milk kept spilling over. He kept dropping the milk on the floor. And he says he took this as a sign that this is not to be relied upon, and therefore people actually don't normally do that. But he quotes here the issue of digestion. The minhag poshut and the widespread minhag b'medinas elu in our communities. Now remember, when the Ramah said the word minhag poshut, he meant 1 hour. Only 200 years later, the minhag poshut is lehamtin sheishah, for Ashkenazim to wait 6 hours. Kedada bed yosef. And here he brings in the rubric of minhag. The Hamekel Bazeh, if you're lenient with this, either you are breaching what? Bal Titosh Torah Timecha. Remember last week I told you Torah Timecha is one of the classic sources of Minag. You are breaking the posik of do not leave the mother, the Torah of your mother. This is Minag. Mikol Mokim im Ein Basa Batavshal Rakshin is Basha Bakhtera. Then he brings the two leniencies. And one of them I mentioned that if it's just cooked in a meaty pot, that's okay, you don't have to worry. And the other is if someone is sick. If someone is sick or ill, maybe they don't have to wait the full six. If they're Ashkenazi, they can wait just one. And by the way, this is a psak which is brought down, including for pregnant women, if they need to drink a lot of milk, and they have to wait after meat, maybe they don't need to wait six, maybe they can only wait allowed to wait one, if they're Ashkenazi. If they're Sephardi, it's more difficult. By the way, with young children also, they say that you should start them off, once they're old enough to know what they're doing, with one, and then gradually move them up towards whatever your minhag is. Let's assume, according to him, it's six, because he says that is the minhag of poshet. So too, the Orach HaShulchan in number 23, Yesh Medaktikim Lahamtin Sheit Shos. There are those who keep 6 hours. Achachilas Basa Legvina. V'chein Nachon La'azot. He quotes the Ramah. V'chein Aminhag HaPoshet V'chol Tfutzot Yisrael. Now it's not just, it's Chol Tfutzot Yisrael. Everybody keeps 6 hours. He's living in Lithuania, in Nevada, at the beginning of the 20th century. Lahamtin Sheish Shos. V'chalila L'shanot Bazeh. Chalila L'shanot Bazeh. And it says, Poretz Geder. Nachashich Hashena. You're Poretz Geder, if you will. You're breaking through. It's priestess to wait less than 6 hours. In fact, the Orach HaShulchan, the question from the gentleman over there, the Orach HaShulchan has an extremely machmir approach and says your 6 hours must be from the end of your last meal until the beginning of your next meal, until your milk meal. Therefore, according to the Orach HaShulchan, if you finished eating meat at 2 o'clock, but you only benched at 4, okay, you'd have to wait 6 hours from 4 until the beginning of your milk meal, even if you only ate milk 3 hours into your milk meal. This is not followed by anybody, really, and everybody holds that you can count 6 hours from the end of your eating meat to when you start eating it. The last two things I just want to mention on the last page are as follows. The Pre-Chadosh brings down the idea of halachic hours. You can read this in your own time. He basically says there's sha'ot, zmaniot, not fixed hours, which means that he says you can wait 4 hours, since sometimes the 6 hours means 4 hours in the winter, because the halakhic hour is only around 45 minutes. Therefore, since it works out like that, or a little bit over 45 minutes, you can wait 4 hours. That's where the minhag of 4 hours comes from. Oh, people say, well, does that mean in the summer you have to wait 7 hours, 8 hours? And the answer is Lapdafka, because even though in the winter people eat more frequently, in the summer they still eat every 6 hours. They won't eat every 8 hours because there are certain eating patterns that people have. But that's where 4 hours comes from. So we know where 6 hours comes from. We know where into the 6 hours comes from. We know where 1 hour comes from. We know where 4 hours comes from. But we still don't know where 3 hours comes from. The answer seems to be in Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach talks about this, and 3 hours is recorded as a minhag. The German Jews, many of them, kept 3 hours, although in Chorev, Rav Hirsch clearly writes 6 hours, not 3 hours, which is a bit of a shocker to some. Dan Grunfeld, in his translation of Chorev, is very quick in the footnotes to say, but many people keep 3 hours, even though Rav Hirsch himself said 6 hours. It seems that 3 hours comes from the following. The Ashkenazim, who said, we want to be machmir for a time period, like the Rambam said. They said, look, you're right, we are machmir not just to go from one meal technically to the next, but to wait. But for us, waiting between one meal and the next makes more sense for 3 hours than for six. Because in Western Europe, you eat every 3 hours. You have breakfast, and then you have elevenses, and then you have lunch, then you have afternoon tea, then you have dinner, then you have a little snack before bed. Basically, you nibble all day long. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, that seems to be the basis for 3 hours, because they are being machmir. They are being machmir to keep a between meals time frame, but between meals for those Western Europeans seems to be 3 hours, and therefore don't worry about the 3 hour people they have on whom to rely. Let me just finish with one line in 26. Rav Osher Weiss, one of the Gedolei Hapsak in Yerushalayim today, he writes on this, just 2 lines from him, Lahalocha, according to Halocha Lamaisa, Nira, it seems to me, he says, the Nara, Nara, Upashte, which is the phrase in Chazal, which is, everybody does what they do. The Eilaham Amtinim Rek Shah, those people only wait 1 hour, or Shalosh hours, or 3 hours. Ein Limchot Biyadam. Don't criticize them. They have on whom to rely. V'yesh lehem al mishe yismachu. Ach, but Hamachmir, if you want to be Machmir for six, Tavo alav bracha. You will get a nice bracha, v'chei nochon lasos, and I can leave you to think about that over the next week. Okay, we'll finish there. I'm happy to answer questions afterwards. I'm going to keep people behind. Next week we'll talk about Minhage of Purim, Minhagim of Purim, and deal with some of the interesting issues that come up there.